Welcome in. Time for KER Politics, thought-provoking views from leaders in the field. The views of our guests do not necessarily represent the views of either Corey or Big Al.
Now, time for KER Politics.
Welcome in. Time for Daily Editorial. This Wednesday, we're running a little bit late. I had a Bible study this morning that ran late. It was a bit of a conflict, but a very important conflict of me. Jim is going to talk a little bit today about censorship, government censorship, and freedom of speech. Jimmy, you're on, man.
So The Intercept did an article just the last few days outlining where the federal government has gotten involved directly with big tech companies and social media companies in order to censor and silence opposing ideas.
Yeah.
And the entire thought comes from the foundations of, you know, back in the post 9/11 era when we passed the Patriot Act, and then the idea was to stop misinformation or national security threats. And that's evolved now to basically stop political opposition or ideas that are not consistent with what the government policy is. Incredibly dangerous. And I think it's finally seeing the light of day. Something that's been going on for a long, long time. We certainly know that the different people leak things to media agencies in order to shape opinions. But what we're seeing here is something very different. It's the FBI, it's the CIA, it's the Department of Justice, it's the executive branch of government reaching out and telling, influencing and telling big holders of information what to say and what they shouldn't say. And it's incredibly damaging to our society.
Jimmy, let's hear some examples, some recent examples.
Well, I mean, the big one that has hit just recently was this actual admission by Mark Zuckerberg that the FBI had intervened and told Facebook about possible Russian disinformation, and then Facebook went ahead and stifled any discussion and any passing of information on the Hunter Biden laptop story prior to the 2020 election. And that actually, according to most polls, had a significant effect on the election, or would have had people known that it was actually accurate.
Yeah.
But not only did they get involved and directly talk to the agencies, apparently, according to the information that's now out, Department of Homeland Security and other agencies have actually been meeting with Facebook and Twitter and Google executives on a routine basis, in some cases a monthly basis, in order to decide which things to silence.
Okay.
And a lot of it had to do with COVID. A lot of it has to do with, unfortunately, with political action, you know, potentially negative information for this administration.
And this is according to who, Jim?
Well, actually, it's by documented proof from written documents from Freedom of Information requests, from Judicial Watch, from The Intercept, and from actually members of the – well, I mean, Mark Zuckerberg actually said it publicly on the Joe Rogan show that the FBI intervened. And, of course, you know, we've got lots of documented cases – of information in people's let's just put the big one out there.
Okay.
Twitter, based on January 6th, shut off Donald Trump and 80 million followers.
Yeah.
Because they didn't like what he said. Because they said he was inciting violence.
Yeah.
And there's absolutely no proof that he was ever inciting violence. So
yeah, I was under the impression, quite frankly, that I could swear I heard him say, "Remember, no violence."
He did. Yeah. I mean, yeah, there was, it is a political move that's being actually coordinated with intelligence agencies, with Department of Justice, with the Homeland Security, in order to silence opposition, any potential negative appearances for this administration. It's overcoming freedom of information, which is absolutely essential to a free republic.
Of course it is.
Yeah, but for some reason they don't believe it anymore. And in fact, Dick Durbin, let me give you an example of in the last like 48 hours. Dick Durbin, who is the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, has said that free speech does not allow people to, it doesn't protect rhetoric and that could potentially lead to violence. So basically, he was arguing that this entire event with Nancy Pelosi, his husband Paul, and this guy DePepe was created by rhetoric, and that doesn't allow, you're not allowed to do that. And that would, in fact, be something. And this is the head of the Senate Judiciary Committee, absolutely undermining First Amendment guarantees that tell the government they cannot get involved in silencing speech. That is the rule in America. You cannot do that constitutionally. The federal government cannot do that. And somehow they are circumventing that, and they're justifying it because they say, "Oh, we're gonna stop hate speech. We don't want we want free speech." And this is absolutely sickening to me when I hear this.
Yeah. Well, okay. They don't want hate speech, but they want freedom of speech. In my personal opinion, you're getting a lot of hate speech right now from the left. Liz Cheney was on PBS again yesterday. And there was a lot of hate speech from her, negative things to be said about Donald Trump, which, I mean, that strikes me as being hate speech.
Well, that's what's really that a lot of people absolutely have incongruent thoughts on this. And I remember we've talked about it a couple of times.
Sure.
Seeing an article in our local paper where a woman writes in to the editor and says, you know, we must protect free speech, but we have to stop hate speech. Yet the same woman can absolutely hate Donald Trump and scream at Donald Trump supporters. Now, what happens when Donald Trump is in power and his law enforcement people are attempting to influence or shape messages against him? What will those people feel like? And that's how this works. There is no such thing. You can damage people directly through some sort of speech. And of course, we all know the stand up in a theater and say that it's on fire when it's not.
Sure.
That's much different than getting up and protesting.
Yeah.
Everybody that stood up and was angry with the George Floyd protests, under the same rules that they are pushing now, the same leftist rules they're pushing now, under a different government, could have been arrested. And I just, for some reason, the why they can't realize that this is something we were taught in school when you were younger in a previous generation, but apparently it's not taught anymore. People do not understand these basic principles that for what goes to one side will actually affect the other.
Yeah. Well, you are clearly not lambasting one side. What you're doing is giving an opinion on what's happening to freedom of speech in our country. And I applaud you for doing that.
Well, you know, this began, so, you know, a lot of people felt justified during the initial Iraq and Afghanistan problems because of 9/11. And there was, and of course it began to shift. Remember, the left was so angry about the Patriot Act.
Yeah.
You'd hear on NPR, you'd hear every day, all day, how this was going to take away personal freedoms. Now, those same people that were making those arguments are using the Patriot Act in order to justify going after their political opponents and silencing them.
Yeah.
And using these different federal agencies to intimidate, all too willingly, the big tech companies and the social media and the media companies. And, you know, there's just something very wrong with that. But I'll tell you why. It starts, it really transitions through 9/11 to where it began. But when it became political was in 2009 and 2010, when Barack Obama made speeches in the Middle East to open up and bring basically a transition through, quote, the Arab Spring.
Yeah.
And he actually was the government was working in coordination with Facebook in order to facilitate the uprisings all through the region. And Facebook was quite proud of doing it. In fact, they publicly admit it, and the administration worked with them in order to spread information, which basically caused the deaths of hundreds, if not thousands, of people and overturning of multiple governments there. Now, they weren't the nicest governments, but bottom line is the instability that came out of that was absolutely devastating to the region. Yeah. They weren't prepared for democratic uprisings. And what followed with that was very extremist organizations taking over in many of these countries, and complete disillusion and of any governance in Libya, the civil war in Syria, the overturning of the government in Egypt that installed the Muslim Brotherhood, which took extreme actions to silence and
Kurds. Yeah.
So this was an outcome of a cooperative effort between the Obama administration and social media company, in particular Facebook. And that was a practice test for what eventually they tried to do in 2012 by influencing media in order to help Obama win, and then in 2016. But it didn't work because there were so many people that were absolutely frustrated with the previous 8 years of Obama, and Trump comes in. But then you see the media and the silencing and these agencies getting directly involved with silencing speech. And of course, what we get ultimately with that is the COVID narrative that you have to lock down, that you've got to wear masks, that you've got to take the jab, and a huge propaganda effort that was basically put in place by this massive organization of the Health and Human Services and the federal government in order to silence opposition. And now what you're beginning to see is finally people are waking up to the fact that they've basically been propagandized.
Yeah.
CNBC, Jim Cramer, yesterday, I believe, was on television talking about censorship and propaganda can be a good thing, as he was talking about Chinese lockdowns over COVID.
What were the repercussions? You know what?
His other co-hosts sitting there on the show were just like astounded that he would say something like
that.
But that's how far we've gone from actually protecting a freedom of information and freedom of speech. Absolutely.
That's pretty interesting. And remember the backbone of our show is listening to both sides of every story. And Jim is certainly giving the other side of the story. Jim, what do you have to say about what's going on right now with this Pelosi thing in San Francisco?
You know, again, you're looking at – there's some very interesting questions that need to be answered. You know, they're saying, oh, there was no one else in the House. But how does Paul Pelosi standing there with this guy DePepe with a hammer, how do they open the door? Someone had to open the door. The fact that the law enforcement had a cryptic call that didn't sound like it was anything too serious, and there are some arguments that, in fact, he was doing that to not offend or get the guy more upset while he was in the bathroom. But it's very weird questions. Who the heck opened the door? Law enforcement, based on a welfare check, would not have had a warrant or imminent threat indicators to open the door. Had there not been a threat and they broke in the house and opened the door, that would have been incredibly illegal and someone would have lost their job.
Yeah.
So very much risk averse. So something is very strange about just who opened the door. The relationship, what's happening here, all the media. You know, he may very well have broken in. This guy DePepe may have very well broken in. He may have gone after Paul Pelosi. But what we're seeing is a manipulation of information about DePepe and the media and tech companies, in particular, you know, searches on some of these issues, silencing potential questions, but more importantly, corporate media attacking anybody that says, hey, there could be more to this story. Now, the guy, DePepe, he actually has pled in his arraignment, pled innocent, which means there is definitely more to the story. He's going to have some justification of what was going on at that event. And that will actually, my view is that there's probably a lot of stifling of information right now in order to protect Pelosi's through and the Democratic Party through November 8th.
Let me ask you a question. Why would Paul Pelosi really have anything to do with the Democratic Party? I mean, it's all about his wife. It's not him.
Well, I mean, they're one and the other. How has he made his money?
I don't know.
Through his wife.
Okay.
How does he do that? Look at his investments. There's been a lot of information about his investments and the way that he's now. Look, I know we've talked about it before, off mic or whatever. And I have my very, very close family relationship between my wife's family and Paul Pelosi. Known him since the 70s.
Yeah.
But since Nancy's been in Congress, he has made a tremendous amount of money by picking very wise stocks just before legislation came down that actually supported those industries. So they're directly interrelated to it. And it's not him protecting the Democratic Party. It's whatever actions he takes that may undermine her credibility.
Can you explain that to me? I don't understand that. Whatever actions he takes would undermine her credibility.
Well, what happened to him recently, just a couple weeks ago? He gets this DUI.
Yeah.
He gets his DUI, and there's another party inside the car with him.
Yeah.
Anybody know who that is yet?
No.
It wasn't Nancy.
No.
So what does that look like for a woman that pretends to be a Catholic leader and the head of the White House? I'm sorry, not the White House, so the head of the House of Representatives? Doesn't look good. Just like Hunter Biden.
Personally say it doesn't look good for her husband. For sure. I mean, it makes her look a little silly, you know, but I think it more reflects on Paul.
Well, it undermines the entire legitimacy of her position.
How does
it? And it happens politically. Like, what happens if, you know, let's think about any other Republican candidate that just has something outside of his, you know, not even directly with him. They are crushed. And they have to bow out of with any type of negative action against their families.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's rules for thee, and there's, you know, there's rules for the privileged, and she doesn't want to take that political risk. It would be very bad right now to have it turn out that there was more to this story, and a lot of people make decisions based on that.
Why would they do that?
Well, voters do that every day. You make decisions based on what you hear in the media, the last bit of news you heard, right?
Sure.
Yeah. So, hey, here's someone that says she's a Catholic, that's, you know, all this. Now, what happens if there's more to this story and maybe there was some relationship going on or he invited him over there? You know, Andrew Gillum, the potential governor of Florida that, you know, Ron DeSantis ran against in the first race 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, what happens with him?
Oh, you're going to have to refresh my memory, Jim.
Well, there's accusations that he's doing something. He has some level of corruption because of his, you know, position as a mayor in Florida and his city. And then it turns out he gets found on the floor of a hotel with a gay prostitute and passed out with drugs because the cops come.
Yeah.
So,
well, that obviously hurt his campaign. There's no question about that. I mean, in many circles, I would think that absolutely devastated his campaign.
Well, that was actually after the campaign, after he'd lost the race. But again, it shows character, right?
Yeah.
And so what happens before the race, what is often being is being hid by the media, especially a leftist media or the progressive-oriented media.
Yeah.
It, you know, exactly what's happened with John Fetterman. John Fetterman is not cognitively capable of being in the Senate. Joe Biden is not cognitively capable of running this nation with the stresses that are involved.
Yeah.
With him. But the media is protecting him.
Yeah.
And that's the problem right now. You know, when you've got people protecting, you know, had people known that Hunter Biden had a very direct connection to major Chinese industries that were connected to Chinese intelligence.
Yeah.
And that Joe Biden was getting money from those deals, and he was getting those deals because he was the former vice president or senator.
Right.
Most people wouldn't vote for him.
No, I would think that would be true. Correct. Yeah, absolutely true. Jimmy, we're up to 20 minutes. So I just want to say that a friend of mine in my Bible study just got back from Florida. He was down there for a month on a family vacation at Disney World, and he had one thing to say about Ron DeSantis. He said, Floridians love Governor DeSantis.
To find out more about today's guest, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You are listening to KER Politics.